Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Mission Win? No. And that is by Philby Scrolling on Twitter. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanner. So, let's be friends. Welcome to the Hungarian Grand Prix race review. Some people call Hungaroring Monaco without the walls. Stop doing that. Monaco wishes it was Hungaroring with walls. No, Hungaroring is a proper racetrack. I enjoyed my Sunday watching F1 today. That was a brilliant race. I like this track. It is a proper racetrack. Clearly, the cars have grown a bit big for it and a bit fast for it. But I always enjoyed the racing here. Sector 1, yes, that's the only real opportunity for overtaking. But it is a genuine opportunity for racing and overtaking. You see lots of skill, different lines, and you see racecraft-based battles. And I think this is another win for the regulations as well. And I don't care how broken my record sounds, these regulations looked bad because there were too many street tracks up at the front of the calendar. The new regulations aren't perfect, but they are a step in the right direction. This track, more than any we've seen, proves it. This is a good track. The aerodynamics in F1 rendered just a little bit numb, and I think F1 has taken steps towards fixing that aero. If we take a step towards it in Hungaroring, maybe we take a step towards saving some of the other tracks as well. But it was a fantastic race, and at various times there was 5 drivers who had a legitimate shot at winning this Grand Prix, and it's been a while since we've seen that. So coming up, we'll discuss, are Mercedes actually back? And is it a little bit too late? Probably. How good is George Russell? I'll claim that he's among the most aggressive and talented drivers in modern F1. And I'll also claim that he's not quite on Hamilton's level yet. But that's okay. The future is a very long place. We'll ask, is Ferrari fundamentally broken at a management level? That sounds harsh. Good. And we have a lot to unpick in the midfield as well. Did Ocon definitely mess up Alonso's race? Sorry, Matt. And we'll ask, are Ferrari allergic to champagne? We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed. With the kind permission of our better halves, we aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined in the shed by Matt Trumpets. Happy birthday, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Although it looks to be now a sad one, as I'm going to have to devote the rest of my entire life to figuring out how Ferrari got it this wrong at the Hungaroring.
And in the shed, our race analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Jean. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Spenners. I've had a drink and I want to rant about Alonso and Stroll.
And you may. And joining us from the other side of the whole entire planet, we've got Jonathan Simon. Hey, Jono.
What's going on? I love that race. Proper Grand Prix racing. That's what we love. Lots to unravel. It's a big ball of string. It's very tied up. It's all tangled. Let's unravel it.
I like it. Let's unravel that big ball of string. Actually, you threw me a little bit there, Jono. What I really wanted to do is say, let's have a look at where the race is won and lost. Although, I do feel like we need a big ball of string. We need a big ball of string bumper. That would be very, very good. You've started something there, Jono. I think, actually, let's just start with this track in general, Alex. I think a lot of people have referred to this as a go-kart track. And I don't think that's sort of particularly unfair or even an insult. Like, we love a good outdoor track, but a lot of times at go-kart tracks, particularly indoor tracks, there's like that one bit where you can really overtake. There's no overtaking opportunity. The rest of the lap is about maximizing and setting yourself up for that one part of the lap, and that's what Hungaroring is like. But that isn't necessarily a bad race.
I think the reason it's referred to as a go-kart track is just there's no brake. You're literally corner into corner into corner into corner, and you've got to breathe deep to actually survive the circuit. Again, I know people don't like us talking about iRacing, but it's been the track on iRacing for the F1 this week, and it's breathless just to do 17 laps. Yeah. For them to do 70 laps today is just incredible, because it is just so relentless. And especially, okay, it was cooler today than it had been, but if they'd have raced in the temperatures that they were in on Friday, it would have been incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, Jono, not just the sort of the skill required being relentless, but all the way from basically the last corner, you're setting yourself up for those opportunities. It's probably half the lap is actually pretty decent racing.
Yeah, it is. And the first sector is so interesting because you look at turn two, that long radius left-hander.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And the interesting part about it is the outside is cambered very weirdly. So what happens is a lot of drivers will try and sail around the outside there and you go, oh, they're not going to get the pass done. And then somehow the car just sticks to the road and gets the pass done. So it's a very interesting corner, that turn two, and it really makes it a good overtaking spot, except for Daniel Ricciardo.
What I love about that corner is there's just so many different lines you can take. So it is really, really easy to go side by side if you let it happen.
Yeah, but I mean, the first example to look at there, Alex, was like Russell just absolutely pinning it around the outside of Alonso when he had fresh tyres. So there are options there. Plus, the other thing is that corner is also an error generator. So not only is there multiple lines, it's also somewhere you can pressure someone into a mistake straight after a very similar corner. Sorry, Jono.
And I think I'll go. So it's a very interesting circuit. I think it's 20 years to the day. Do you remember they used to have an older layout where turn one was a lot closer to the pit exit, so we didn't have a long front straight, and those final couple of corners barely existed in a sense. So it was much worse. It was much more of a go-kart circuit. This is actually the modernized version to help overtaking. And it's still like, but I've heard it's also at Monaco without the walls. You hear a lot of nicknames about this circuit. But the best part about it is not only that, it's not only the layout that's cool, it's the changing conditions we get here. We get so many races over the years, similar to what we've got today as well.
Okay, so I'm going to push back slightly against the Monaco without the walls, because it's something that's said to kind of indicate how tight and twisty it is. It's a really, really bad comparison. For a start, it's not a road, so the track isn't like cambered outwards to let rainwater go. It's like a racetrack. It's flat, or it's positively or negatively cambered, but like as a racetrack is. It's got curbing. You can race over that. You can race and get pushed wide of the walls, which means you can challenge, and if it goes wrong, you can leave the track legally and come back legally. Saying it's like Monaco without the walls, it's such a weird comparison. I want to bonk it on the head forever, and I don't know if I have the power to do that as a podcaster. No one's laid out the podcaster's charter. But what about this race in particular, Matt? I think we saw teams at first assuming. I mean, we looked at Mike Caulfield tweeting earlier in the day saying overtaking is going to be so hard here that it's going to be a one-stop, two-stop won't work. And then later, after having seen the race, you go, oh, no, this is a track where you can overtake and there's high tyre wear. So I think this race really did offer a lot. If you were a team boss at the start of the race today, where would you have gone with your strategy looking forward?
Well, it actually, the start of the race would have been the place to make your important strategy decision, and consider that it was cold and consider that there was some rain coming down and there's only one tire you'd really want to be on in those circumstances. And that would be the soft tire, even though it would absolutely put you off of that one stopper you were convinced was going to win you the race 10 minutes ago. And in fact, we saw that Red Bull made that shift after the reconnaissance laps. They were planning to start on the hards, according to Horner, which I'm not entirely sure I believe, but they absolutely decided to start on the softs once the drivers got out on track.
Yeah, and it really did split the field today. So like, there was a huge difference between the soft runners. And again, what have we talked about? We've talked about when Pirelli have got it right to push us into that more two-stop territory. Like, the one-stop just wasn't on today. And I think the races are better when it's 2/3. But today was almost like, it was like a firm two, but a good, in a good way.
Yeah, it was in a good way. I mean, essentially what you had is a complicated situation. But simply put, if you made the wrong tire choice at the start of the race, if you were on the mediums, you had a chance. But if you tried the hards, you were toast. And so if you stuck with Pirelli's two compounds, the medium and the soft, that was their quickest way around the track in a two-stop, then you were going to do okay as long as you trusted the tires to do the job. And we'll get into it more later. But if you're going to ask where the race was won and lost, it's when they took those tire blankets off. The people on the softs had the decided advantage.
Okay, so last season, we were all complaining, and by all, I mean mainly me, saying that we should get rid of this rule that you have to start on the race tire that you qualified on if you qualified in the top 10. Jono, is this a good change?
Of course it is. Look what it gave us today. I mean, that was a prime example of it. You had George Russell going, oh, I'm going to sail away, which he didn't on the softs. You had Ferraris try to do something different. You had the Red Bull start on the softs to get a good launch because they started back towards the back end of the grid. I think it's a magnificent rule change. I think it was overdue. I think it was something we were calling for, you know, ages ago, 5-10 years ago. We finally got it done. The sport's getting progressive. That's what I love about F1 the past few years. We're getting a bit more progressive now, which is nice, since Bernie left.
And there is that dramatic moment, Matt, where we find out, you know, what tyres the drivers are starting on. It's a bit less of a thing if it's a one stop, but I think it really opens up a lot of intrigue with these longer stops. And especially today, when you had Mercedes, for example, who we know can't fire the tyres up, and they split their tyre strategy because one of them has jumped up to pole. Yeah, I mean, it was a great element. Alex, sorry.
I mean, when was the last time we ever saw Mercedes split a strategy?
I can tell you. It was 2015.
Sure.
It was specifically to separate Rosberg and Hamilton, wasn't it? It's like, yes, we'll have that little bit of a fight at the beginning. Now we'll put them on different tyres so that they separate.
I'm talking about beginning of the race.
Oh, right.
So
no.
That's what I mean. It's just that case of to have them go so separate. I mean, obviously, because they know they're not ultimate pace fastest car, so they have to try something different. But it was to keep George ahead, and it was to, I guess, extend Lewis into the race a little bit more. But I think Lewis might have wanted to start on those softs, considering where he ended up today and the fact he got stuck behind Lando.
Yeah, well, if we're going to get into that a little bit, yeah, he expressed as much that for him, he got killed on the medium tire, and that, you know, obviously the DRS fail in qualifying, meaning him starting further back, it made sense from Mercedes' point of view to put him on that tire. And it made sense to put Russell on the soft tire because essentially he was about the same speed as the Ferraris on the medium tire.
Yeah.
Both Ferraris on the medium tire is where you begin to think, well, maybe a trick has been missed here.
Well, I think Mercedes were thinking, well, let's check our race pace out. Let's see if Russell can extend a 5-10 second advantage on Ferraris who are starting on mediums. And he didn't, because essentially they had inverse strategies. Lewis was on the soft for the final stint. George was on the soft for the first stint, but George just didn't make that tire work in the opening stint. I think if he did and he clawed out a good 5-10 second advantage, I mean, look, I think Verstappen would have still won the race, but he would have been up there for second for sure. So it's just that opening stint for Russell that definitely cost him.
Yeah, obviously, Matt, Russell had a full petrol tank. He was a big heavy car for those softs.
And let's remember that it's the early laps that really give Mercedes the hardest time with regards to lap times, or at least certainly for Hamilton, as we looked at. So Hamilton would have gotten more usage out of the softs at the end of the race, I think, than Russell did at the beginning. But he did well to extend the stint that far because, for example, Norris absolutely could not.
All right, but before we get too deep, we need to really focus in on the race winner. How did Max Verstappen win this race? So, to be fair, I have been really, really full of praise for Verstappen and Red Bull. They've got a lot of my Thing of the Weekends awards because they have just been absolutely relentless. They've got the tactics right. After those early DNFs, they've been mechanically sound. Verstappen hasn't really put a foot wrong or a tyre wrong, aside from that wind-assisted half-spin in Barcelona, I think was the last time we saw him make a real error. So this, by comparison to the rest of the Red Bull season, has been a scruffy weekend. But it still looked effortless. And that is slightly disturbing for the rest of the grid. 10th to 1st for Verstappen. And when you consider that he locked up, so he made an error in Q3 that cost him his banker lap and then had that engine issue. And then in the race, he also dropped it. I think lost about 10 seconds. And they didn't actually have the best overall textbook strategy, yet they still breezed to the front. I think we might have to start be considering that we have underestimated just how good this pre-plank rule enforcement Red Bull is, Matt.
Well, I'm going to say that I think you're correct about Red Bull, the team. And you're absolutely correct about the fact that they had reliability issues. But the difference is they weren't race-ending reliability issues. Certainly, I think that Verstappen dropping it and doing the 360 after he'd just gotten around Leclerc was entirely down to the clutch problems they were having. Yeah. I don't think that was driver error.
That was multi 21. No. Sorry, that was
fail.
Fail 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, in qualifying, they called it fail 21. If I was Red Bull, I would not allow fail 21 to exist, Jono. That's got to be an engineer. 21. That's got to be an engineer's prank. He's gone, I'll do the fail code. He failed 21.
Oh, yep. No. Well, 2013, wasn't that the fail 21? Wasn't that the one we had at
Malaysia?
Multi-21. Yeah. That's the one. If anyone who hasn't watched Formula One before, the past few years, go look up that race. Very, very interesting drama there. But going on what Matt said and the advantage Verstappen's having, I think he overtook Leclerc like, what, two or three times this race? I'm trying to remember how many times Verstappen overtook Charles. So I think he lost about 5 seconds from that spin. The best part about it was he pirouetted and then pointed back in a straight line, which is perfect. You know, if you're going to spin and he was pointing the other way, he might not have won this race. He could have lost a lot of extra time.
Yeah.
The funniest part I found about all of this is that despite it being a champion's drive, he's up 80 points in the championship. The summer break's 4 weeks. Max Verstappen could take a 9-week break, show up in October for the Singapore Grand Prix, and still lead the championship.
Don't do that. But yes, it's a commanding lead, Alex. You must be delighted.
Why would I be delighted? No, I mean, listen, Max has been brilliant this season. I can't, how much it pains me to say how good Red Bull also have been.
Yeah.
They haven't messed up pit stops. They have done impeccable strategy. I mean, you just never worry about a Red Bull strategy going wrong because it's just always on point. And then they've, as I was thinking about this earlier, they've won all the races they're supposed to win.
Yeah.
You know, because of the way their car has been on that circuit. And then all the races that Ferrari should have won, Ferrari have either tripped themselves up or Red Bull have just out-strategized them. And that's what you got to do to win championships. And you're seeing a much more relaxed, confident Max Verstappen this year than we ever saw at any point of last year. I think a lot of last year Max looked like a deer in the headlights, and this year he's looking like a champion who's just got it all under control, completely calm and collected.
Wow.
and is just doing a fantastic job.
Alex, some people will argue that he is a champion, so not like a champion. He's driving like the champion he is.
He's driving like a champion. I said that.
Well, I feel like there was a difference.
No. Don't put words in my mouth.
I feel like there was an inflection. I'm gonna click the replay button. We're gonna put that on social media and let everyone else decide.
I would say the same thing when you talk about Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah. Matt,
actually, to be fair, his drive today was very Lewis Hamilton-esque.
Oh, we'll get to that. Believe me, Van Gien, we are getting to that. But Matt, Red Bull.
Red Bull. Very simply, they followed the prescribed strategy, drove their lap times, and watched everybody else around them just completely get it wrong. Now, I know that you're going to give me a hard time about Verstappen passing Leclerc twice, but they were on different tires. And that was inevitable. I think once Ferrari put Leclerc on the hard tires, he was done like a dinner, even if they didn't know it at the time. But what amazes me about this is, of course, they're relaxed. They're starting 10th. They were like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll get third.
Yeah.
All right. We're driving to make third. Oh, look, there goes Ferrari. Oh, look, there goes Mercedes. Oh, wow. Well, oh, I guess I'm leading the race now. Okay. Yeah, I guess I'll just drive home in first.
I have to say, in our WhatsApp chat from 2:18, I called Max Verstappen could win this race. And that was just after he'd, I think, just got past the Alpines. And I'm like, ooh, despite the fact he was like 13, 14 seconds behind, it was like, he's got a shot here.
You absolute maverick, you wild card, Van Gien, calling that Max Verstappen in the 2022 pre-rule enforcement Red Bull could cruise to first place. What? That's a real...
Who knew that Ferrari would just throw it away with stupid strategy?
It's a real daring bet. Matt, Alex makes a really good point here. The beginning of that race for Verstappen. After turn one, because turn one, he actually lost a bunch of places. He fell back. He was like five places behind Perez. The seas parted a little bit between turn one and turn two. But everything after that, he was decisive. Like, he really cut through the pack.
And if you were going to talk about Max winning the race, yeah, Red Bull did the strategy thing right. But those opening laps were critical. He was up to eighth place by lap two. And by lap eight, he was in sixth position, and he was only 11 seconds off the lead. And if you look at the amount of damage that the undercut eventually did to his competitors, this was absolutely critical. And in fact, I would say that after that first pit stop, the only real competition he had was Leclerc. And of course, that's Ferrari strategy coming to his rescue.
It then got very hard for Leclerc.
Yes, very hard.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know where to go from that, except, you know, Red Bull are doing everything they need to do.
They are. They do have reliability issues. There may be engine penalties coming, but right now,
When are they? And when's the gearbox penalties? I'm neutral. I'm completely neutral.
Last gearbox on Verstappen's car, they put new power units in today, which I think are the third of the season. So they're at their limit right now. And if there are other upgrades, those will be new power units that they'll have to introduce with a penalty.
It's more how they're going to perform for the new regulation, because if you believe wild speculative rumors, Perez is running a Belgium spec car.
I believe all of them.
Would make it very interesting.
Jono.
Look, I think if they're going to take the penalty, why don't you just take it at Belgium? Just come back. Didn't they used to, I think a few people have done that over the years. Just come back at Spa, come back at Monza, take the penalty there, overtake people, and then it's going to look like, oh, well, you know, instead of, oh, your engine blows up before Singapore, now you're starting last, now you finish, end up P8. Like, it's, I think Red Bull's got this season, I mean, is it too obvious for me to say they got one hand on the trophy?
Oh, we'll see. Hang on. I'll come back to that in a second, Matt.
Yeah, I just want to say it was actually incredibly inconvenient for them that they've done so well with their power units because, you know, after Verstappen had the problem yesterday, they mount a new one. Whereas Gasly at the race, you know, they finished, Gasly put a new power unit, had to start from the pit lane. Imagine Max could have started from the pit lane and still been well up into the points today and with a new power unit to boot, except for they'd done too good a job. So they just put a new power unit in and had to start from 10th. Little did they know winning was in the cards.
You know, what surprised me as well was how easy it was to overtake today. I remember last year, Lewis could barely come through the field and Ocon won the race. I was so surprised by that.
No, it's good. I think it's a combination of the regulations. It's a combination of also maybe different conditions because we used to be it being very hot at Hungaroring. So I don't know if there was a lot of graining on the tyres. Maybe that made a difference as well. But I'm willing to apportion a good amount of that overtaking to the regulations. And even though Aston Martin came in with this revolutionary rear wing, I don't think people are going to be scrambling to go and copy Aston Martin at the moment. I just want to quickly, and I don't want to dwell on this too much, I just want to talk about the rumour that Sergio Perez has got this new floor that is basically testing the car that Red Bull are going to have to run after Spa to be in line with the new technical regulations. There's been a lot of people coming out to bat hard saying, they asked Perez, have you got the same car? And he said, yes. And then I've heard people saying they haven't had time to develop a new floor since the regulations, since that technical directive. Therefore, Perez can't be running that new floor. I will say that this reminds me an awful lot. I'm not saying which side I believe. This reminds me an awful lot of 2018, 2019 with the Ferrari fuel flow saga. People went to bat really, really hard defending Ferrari when it was obvious that something really dodgy was happening. We saw Ferrari suddenly lose power and straight line speed, and people were insisting to me until they were blue in the face, no, Ferrari are just choosing to run higher downforce. And all the Ferrari power units, they're also choosing to run higher downforce, even though it's clearly not doing them any favours. I'm just saying that while I'm not buying every rumour, I'm also not going to say it's impossible that there's been a closed door behind the scenes deal where they've discovered something Red Bull are doing and Ferrari are doing, and they've said, hey, sort this by France. That was the first one. And that seems to have gone out a little bit. So maybe a little bit more backdoor shenanigans saying, hey, get it sorted by Spa-Francorchamps. And then Ferrari have gone, okay, we will. But Red Bull, they've got one driver they want to win the title. They've got another driver they can use for all sorts of things. So is it a massive stretch of the imagination that Red Bull, they don't have to change the floor, by the way. All they have to do is change how the plank interacts with the floor. Is it really beyond the realms of possibility that there's an agreement where they have to sort it by Spa and they're using Perez to make sure that they're ready for that?
It would be a reasonable thing to do, but they could also then test in Friday practice with that new plank.
Sure.
I think the issue that I heard, Just to go back to that real quick, was the main reason it got put off was there's the materials they need to make the plank of were in short supply. So everybody agreed to put it off to Spa. So there'd be time to make new planks that would meet the new technical directive.
All right. Tell you what, congratulations, Red Bull. Another victory. I think someone said to me, and I'm not sure if this is exactly right, I think Verstappen can now finish second in every race and win the championship. And that's the first time that has been the case. Alex.
From the last race, he could have finished second in every single race.
Including sprint races and fastest laps.
Yeah.
Oh,
So now it's even more so.
Okay, well,
I think the more interesting one is there is 32 points between Charles Leclerc in second and Lewis Hamilton in sixth.
Jono.
And how about Sergio Perez is almost second in the championship? How about the fact Verstappen could put his feet up for 9 weeks, 5 extra weeks compared to everybody else? Isn't that the most insane part? Has he booked his holiday yet for that next 5 weeks? Skip the 2 races after that. See if somebody else can
win. Well, Mercedes, if you're listening, that just shows you it's got to be Mercedes 1-2s from now on. And I think that does bring us to Mercedes, who for the second time in 2 races have got a double podium. Mercedes are somewhat on fire. They're doing well. And I think in previous races where Mercedes have done well, people have pointed to things like safety cars, virtual safety cars, happenstance that happened to have brought them closer to the leaders, late red flags, whatever. Today, Matt, it does feel like that Mercedes were right up there. And I was watching the timing screens like a hawk, and Russell looked competitive, of course. But a lot of the times, a lot of the phases, Lewis Hamilton looked like the fastest driver-car combination on track.
The second stint on the mediums and the last stint on the softs, Lewis was quick. He was very, very quick. He was quicker, in fact, than anyone else. And so quick that he got the fast lap point. So congratulations. And, it's an interesting thing because Friday they had brought a bunch of parts, tried them, and they were just absolutely nowhere. And then they figured something out overnight, and I don't really know what it is, but it was so figured out that Wolf demanded everyone write down everything they'd done that day so they could correlate it and look and see and find the meaning in the performance that they saw. And Yeah. If you're Mercedes, the only thing you're regretting is Lewis Hamilton not having that final run in qualifying.
Yeah. And by the way, that is not like a rare engineering thing. That is quite good engineering practice. Like, you change a bunch of stuff at once and there's just no way to know exactly what you did. So you need to log that for the future. Any 90s kids will know this peg game called Mastermind, where you had to like find the code and people would only tell you how many of the code was correct and how many is in the right place. And you had to keep kind of just almost randomly swapping it until things fell into the right place. Well, real life fault finding and engineering is very, very similar to that. So I can completely see them having found something, having got a good quality result, and then almost just the entire garage going, stop, everyone stand still. All right, Derek's holding a sandwich. What's in that sandwich, Derek? Tuna. Okay, note that down. Derek, tuna sandwich. But he's right, Alex. They found something.
The thing we'll never know is if Lewis had got on the front row alongside George, let's say George was pole, Lewis was second, would they have put them both on the soft tyre? Which probably in the end might not have been the right strategy. So they both might have ended up falling backwards like George did. I'd like to think they might have tried to be a bit more confident if they had both cars on the front of the grid and still gone for the mediums. But if you notice on that first lap, Lewis was not tidy. He had a wobble through turn one. He had a wobble through turn two. And he had, the Alpines all over him through the first half of that lap until the virtual safety car was called.
And on the strategy too, like, the overcut made the difference for Lewis. He seems to make this strategy work. I think the overcut, now this might be a hot take, I think it's more underrated compared to the undercut. I think we talk about undercut all the time, but the overcut makes a big difference. And Lewis made that work today. And I think that was great for him. The worst part for George and the other Mercedes was, I feel like they were focused too much on strategy and too much on Ferrari. And because Ferrari's strategy is bad, it turned George's strategy bad. So it was like, oh, could George have gone for the overcut as well? Who knows?
You'll notice in the notes I've put Ferrari last because we've done an awful lot of Ferrari chat. But quick primer for people a little bit new to F1. Undercut is where you come in before your opponent and say you're behind them. You come out with fresh tyres. So there's a lap or two where you're on fresh tyres, they're on old tyres. And you hope that when they come in, you've made up enough time that they're then behind you. Obviously, they've got fresher tyres as well. But overcut in this situation, Jono, is where like you go long. You're probably not going to get the track position because the car in front or around you is going to have that fresh tyre advantage. But I think the hope is that you will have fresher tyres for longer by doing that overcut. And so you lose as little time as you can whilst your opponent has gone in and you're staying out.
And that was crucial on the middle stint. I mean, the Aston Martins made it work and somehow scored a point as well. Brilliant stuff by them. But seriously, Lewis Hamilton, like, he just seems to make the overcut work all the time. Yeah. And I think it's about, you need a driver who can conserve rubber, right?
Yeah. Well, I think this is it, Matt. He doesn't use up that first stint tyre. He's always been phenomenal compared to teammates and title rivals in that first stint.
He always has been. And in this race, it's fascinating. Pirelli strategy, I think, was soft, medium, medium was the number one strategy. Russell starting on the soft. But it's the middle stint where we see him responding to Verstappen. Verstappen pits lap 38. Russell and Leclerc both pit lap 39. Hamilton, who started on the mediums and went a bit longer than Russell on his first stop, goes all the way to lap 51, because at that point, Mercedes knew that to meet the regulatory challenge of running two different compounds, they were going to have to get far enough into the race they could put the softs on and get to the end. But what that meant was that Lewis used all of his medium tires up going fast, whereas for Russell, in his second stint, he cut that a bit short. And the same would apply to Leclerc, cutting short both of his stints really on the medium tire and then choosing the ill-fated hard just to make life worse for him.
God, even you saying that, Matt, just talking about Ferrari going onto the hard, I have to take a deep breath because I know it's coming up later, but can we just have a moment to go? Pfft.
Yeah, I think we should all raise a glass to Leclerc's strategic chance of winning the race, because that's when it walked out the door, headed off to the airport and ordered a pizza, waiting for its flight to vacation.
Oh, man. Wow. I hope they've got a swimming pool. Even look at Van Gene with his head in his hands. Don't worry, we're not there yet. We're still talking about Mercedes.
Yeah, can I say a little bit more?
Yeah.
I did right before the show, is one of the 92 things I was trying to get done before we started. I went and looked at the lap times, and I compared Verstappen's lap times in the second stint to Hamilton's lap times.
Okay.
Hamilton was basically the same speed as Verstappen on that stint, if not occasionally quicker. I'm just saying, for everyone who's wondering about where Mercedes is in race pace, yeah, once they get those tires going, they seem like they're kind of there.
And of course, Lewis Hamilton, his results for the last five races have been P3, 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 P2, P2.
Pretty good. Only Max has scored more points.
Yeah. But still, Max has scored more points. So let's not get carried away. Let's not like damn them with faint praise. Lewis Hamilton had an absolute blinder today, especially compared to where he started in P7. And I think I want to come back to that. In fact, no. Let's round off the Lewis Hamilton stuff first, because we say he got stuck behind Lando Norris, and he did, but at least he was able to get past the Alpines, because I had assumed that he was going to be stuck behind some Alpines, some McLarens, Jono. So in that context, starting on the mediums was probably pretty smart. Sit behind them, realise that you're going to be stuck, wait for the softs to go off, and then do your overcut that you were talking about.
Yeah, not only that, but credit to the regulations this year. Like, if this was last year, yeah, you might be right. You might have been stuck behind the Alpines and Norris and all these midfield runners, which he technically sort of was last year. He was stuck behind an Alpine for however many laps, which cost him the win here and gifted Ocon the victory. But look, I at the end of the day, with the Mercedes Strat, they just do this week after week. They have what I call a race car, sort of that Alonso 2012 Ferrari, and it's just always powerful in the race, but just never qualifies as well. I say that, actually, and I take it back, because George Russell had pole position. So what the hell am I talking about right now? But the thing is, these race cars seem to do really well, and yes, Red Bull has one, Mercedes has one, and Aston Martin has one. Ferrari doesn't have one, and that's a big key that we're going to unravel a little bit later on.
So it might sound like a bit of a Hamilton love in here, Matt, but obviously the DRS issue stopped him having a go at pole. Yeah. In qualifying, Lewis Hamilton and George Russell are legitimately incredibly close. So it's not unfair to say that could have been a Mercedes 1-2 today.
Yeah, but the difference between starting first and second, or first and third, and first and seventh,
yes, huge, yeah,
looms large. And I think you're absolutely right. And Hamilton himself said after the race that one of the critical moments for him was not being able to get round Norris.
Yes.
Who, to be fair, was also on soft tires. And thankfully for Lewis,
yeah,
they went kaboom.
Okay, quick one here. Was it worth Norris actually fighting Hamilton so hard and fighting so hard in that position? He was always going to lose those positions, and he just chewed up his soft tires and his soft tire advantage. Surely, Alex, you've done karting, and you know, there's a fast guy coming through who's like 8 stone lighter than me. That might be a me-specific problem. But you go, yeah, let them through, and I'll try and, like, cling on. But there's no point losing time. I don't actually know what Norris was trying to achieve.
I think Norris just likes fighting Lewis.
Fair
enough. Every single time. Fair enough. Time, Lewis is behind Norris.
Yeah.
Norris fights tooth and nail and then waved Max Verstappen bars. So maybe Norris isn't as big a Lewis Hamilton fan as a Brit might be.
I don't want to do down racing, Jono, but you know, the overall tactic. You know, Norris also plays to the TV. He is one of those as well.
But yeah, I'll quickly say, Jeansy, is we don't want Paul DeResta 2.0, letting people pass because you're on a one-stop strategy and everyone else is on six stops. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's good to see somebody race for once. Stuff it.
It is good to see people race, and I get it. But going back to what Smanner said about when you've seen someone come through, if this was later in the race, absolutely.
Yeah.
But this was like,
yeah,
instantly at the very, very start of the race, Lewis was clearly at least half a second a lap quicker. And all you're doing is hurting your own race. So there is a case of fighting to hold position for something you think you can be ahead of at the end. And there is fighting for the sake of fighting. Yeah. And I think Lando just got a little bit held up in what he could have done. But the problem for Lewis was after that was he got past. He had some really, really good pace. And then it dropped off and disappeared, which is why Max undercut him by such a massive amount.
But Norris's mindset would have been, hey, I was top four on Friday in both sessions. I was second in P2. I had the race pace. Maybe he was testing that out in the opening stint. Oh, maybe my race pace is a little bit better. So maybe I could hold the Mercedes up.
Maybe. But there was one telling radio message where they said, what's your pace? Can you push more? And he said, no, I'm absolutely flat out. And I think that's the difference. In Formula One, in the Pirelli era, the first stint is very often about managing your tyres a lot. And it was very clear that Lando Norris was not managing his tyres at all. He said, no, I'm completely flat out. And that, to me, Matt, is what made it more about the TV and not smart. It's like a goalkeeper taking a comfortable, you know, mid-height save and then doing seven somersaults. Yeah, that's great. He looked brilliant for that first in, but he wasn't doing what the other drivers were doing, which is setting themselves up, thinking about the tyre strategy, when they were going to push, when they were going to stalk.
Yeah, he didn't make the minimum window for the first stint on the softs, according to Pirelli. And in fact, I know it was Verstappen overcutting Lando. He lost so much time on those softs at the end of his stint that Verstappen came in two laps later and was still significantly ahead.
But also what it seemed like today is Lando again was in kind of no man's land for the whole race.
Yeah.
He was miles behind the top six and miles ahead of everybody else behind him. Maybe he was lonely, just wanted some fun.
Maybe he did. And actually, I can't blame that. From an entertainment point of view, that is fantastic. It's very, very hard to tell an F1 driver or any racer, like, don't race. So I'm not kind of bemoaning it. I'm just saying it was a kind of an artificial position that he was holding. To me, it feels a little bit like a glory run, like being aware of reputation.
It's like being in the lead because of pit stops and then holding fighting tooth and nail to keep for the guys that have done their pit stops and trying to overtake you.
It was a little bit like that. But I do want to turn attention to George Russell, who I think really, really was on display this weekend. Obviously, there was a little bit of, not luck, but he looked great against Lewis Hamilton because Lewis Hamilton had that DRS issue. So because he was on his own and not expected to do anything, it looks like he's performed an absolute miracle getting to qualifying. But he has done a very good lap to get onto pole position in qualifying because he's very good at doing a very, very good lap. And it's situations like this that can kind of highlight it and show what drivers can do. But I think the other place that he really covered himself in glory was defending very hard against Leclerc. And I think, like this situation with Lando Norris, it's not too dissimilar. He was always fighting a little bit of a losing battle against Leclerc. But the way he defended, the way he positioned his car, the way he fought, actually one of those cut across the tracks into turn five was incredibly harsh. And then the way he came back at Alonso, this was a showcase for what George Russell can do. And the PR game is very, very important. And the career game is important. People around the world saw images of George Russell fighting up front against title contenders doing incredibly. Alex, this has been a fantastic race for George Russell's stock.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been praising George Russell since I saw him in Formula 2. And I've said it from day one, the guy is the real deal. And he showed that at the start of the race.
Yeah.
He got a great start. He didn't buckle under the pressure and mess up the start. He got himself a gap during the virtual safety car. Again, was super clever on how he managed the safety car on the virtual safety car restart. Got a really big lead and just held this 2.6 second gap for a really, really long time until his tyre started to fade. I was a little bit aghast at the way he defended from Charles Leclerc when Leclerc eventually got past, because he definitely moved in the braking zone, and I thought we were about to have an airplane crash.
Right, okay, so this actually leads me to what I wanted to say about George Russell, and this isn't a judgment on whether this is good or bad. This is a statement of fact, and let's see if you agree with this, Jono. George Russell is as aggressive a driver as there is in Formula One.
The radio silence, that's not good for the podcast. Look, he's one of. I think, on a scale of zero to Verstappen 2021, he's not quite the 10. You know, Verstappen last year was as aggressive as you could ever get in a car. But
I think Verstappen's more aggressive than him. But maybe that's changed now. Maybe you might be right. I think maybe since Verstappen won that first world championship, he doesn't have that pressure on him. Yeah. Russell now could be the most aggressive driver. But remember, look at the difference. Russell's fighting for a world championship. He's got something to prove. Verstappen doesn't have anything to prove. His life's sorted, basically.
I think George is very low-key aggressive. You don't realize he's aggressive until you really, really look into it. But yeah, I mean, he did not want... He came into the race today thinking he's going to win. Absolutely, that no other thought crossed his mind than I am disappearing. I've got these softs. I'm galloping off into the distance, and I am winning this race. And then when all of a sudden the Ferraris are coming close to him, he's like, right, I just need to keep track position, and I need to do everything I can to keep it. And if I've got to be ultra aggressive, I'm going to be ultra aggressive. But Charles Leclerc is also aggressive. And I think they both know what to expect from each other. And it was a fantastic spectacle to watch these guys. And the thing that it just makes me so happy for is the future of F1 is so secure with these guys at the helm. So secure because they're all fantastic racing drivers. They've all got so much speed and they've also got a bucket load of respect for each other. And it makes all the difference.
So I think some people might be thrown by non-Brits because British people... And I think New Yorkers understand British passive aggressiveness, that people might think outside of the UK that George Russell is fully like Mr. Nice Guy. And that's how he presents himself. But I think we need to kind of just dispel that myth, Jono. He is not, you know, a polite, you know, he's not a tea sipping gentleman who's going to wave you by.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, doesn't it remind you of Daniel Ricciardo's sort of honey badger mentality where he's always laughing, smiling, but he's so super aggressive in the car? I kind of like that mentality. And I think one thing is I hate when people do this with athletes all the time, not just Formula One, is their real personalities is not how they perform on the racetrack, on the field, on the court, whatever sport you're talking about. It's George Russell can be this professional politician, well-spoken gentleman for his age on the racetrack. Throw all that to the side. I'm here to win. And that battle, going back to it, where you thought there might be an airplane accident, I kind of liked what Leclerc did, sort of just dragged off the brake, tried to get Russell to sort of take a more tight line. Great racecraft, great battle between both of them. It was right on the limit, fair enough. But yeah, it was good that no penalties were given. I thought it was still fair.
Yeah, Jasper Morin in the chat says, because he talks like a gentleman, so polished, Verstappen is always blunt, you see it coming. Which I think that attitude off the track makes it a different feeling on the track. And like Jono said with Danny Rick, it's the exact same thing. Danny Rick's this laughy, jokey character. So is Lando. Again, this laughy, jokey character. They all have serious bite when it comes to wheel-to-wheel battling, and I love it.
Yeah, well, this goes back even to my days in cycling. And if you want to win, you got to have the mind of a killer.
Yeah.
And Russell wants to win. He's got the mind of a killer. I think most of the top drivers have that ability to stick the knife in when it's time without hesitation. And you can be as nice and gentlemanly and friendly and family guy off the track as you want. The visor goes down. There's only one thought in his mind.
So I know we try, or we have tried on Missed Apex, to not pit George Russell against Lewis Hamilton because it's been a very experimental season. There's been lots of stuff going on. But in the last four or five races, Lewis Hamilton has looked to be the fastest driver just on pace Russell looked spectacular today, Alex. But perhaps we are seeing peaks and troughs, whereas Hamilton knows where exactly to apply himself in the race. I think this race kind of shows to me still that we have a spark of brilliance and something to look forward to with Russell. I really do feel like Hamilton still has the edge on him, the edge in that Mercedes team. And that isn't an insult to Russell. To say that you look spectacular, but not quite as a complete package as the 7-time world champion that is your teammate, that's not an insult, but I think it's the truth.
It's that whole thing of there is a very big difference and to be seen between the hotshot, fiery guy with all the talent in the world compared to the guy who's been doing it a really long time, has had his fiery moments, but now is totally confident and comfortable in his own skin and knows what he's capable of. He doesn't need to start on the sauce and gallop ahead of everybody else to win a race. Yeah. He can think his way around it and he knows what he's capable of, and he's got that confidence to just sit there and let it ride out when you've got all these young guns who are just like, power, power, power.
The time has come, my little friends, to talk of Ferrari and other things. It's not the part of the show I was looking forward to the most, to be honest, because this season Ferrari started with so much promise. This is the first time ever, and I promise you this, first time ever since the 80s, which is before that I was like, you know, a tiny, tiny baby. This is the first time watching F1 that I've looked at Ferrari and I've liked the personalities. I like Mattia Binotto. I like Charles Leclerc a lot. I like Carlos Sainz. He's a talent. He's just ridiculously charismatic. And the hair, we don't need to go into the hair. We don't have time. It's magnificent. So this is the least ill feeling I've ever had towards Ferrari until the last few races. Now I'm so angry. The last race I said, you know, it's gone beyond a joke. Now I'm just feeling like they don't want to win races. I feel like everyone else is looking at their strategy going, don't do that. Or they're waiting for them to do that Ferrari thing. And the switch to the hard tyres today didn't land with surprise. And I think it is the dad thing now. I'm not angry at Ferrari. I'm disappointed. And it hurts me. It hurts me that they're not bringing the title challenge that they're supposed to be bringing, Matt.
It's a funny thing. You can make a lot of mistakes and still win a race.
Started.
Yeah, look at Red Bull. Red Bull did that this weekend.
Yes, Max did a 360.
Yeah. You can make a lot of mistakes. And so you could say, well, we can forgive Ferrari being on the medium instead of the soft or not splitting strategy. My personal opinion was they pitted Carlos Sainz in such a way that it looked like they were covering the race leaders, even though that crippled him and got Leclerc ahead of him when he exited the pits, which made their life easier and made what they wanted to happen happen. And what I will say to you is that Leclerc was on track to winning that race until, as Spanners rightly points out, they put him on the hard tire. And here's the thing I don't understand. Alpine put those tires on lap 21 and 23, and everybody knew how bad they were.
Yes.
And yet, lap 39 or 40 or whatever it was, they put him on those tires and it killed his race. He was out ahead of Verstappen. If he'd been on that medium tire, he'd have had one less lap in him and he could well have won that race. Instead, they made the most inexplicable decision I think I have seen all season and killed his race.
And that's saying something.
Don't you reckon Ferrari spend too much time trying to race other people than just focus on what's the best strategy? I mean, to me today, it was why, look, if you're going to put him on the hards, which they knew it wasn't going to work, as Trump had said, at least go soft, soft. Like they had to go to a different compound, right? So they knew the softs weren't going to work. If you're not going to extend that second stint, go soft, soft. Do something different. But to go hards when you have all the evidence there is just absolutely baffling. Look, I will say this. I did hear Mattia Binotto after the race said, hey, our car just wasn't quick. And you know what? Initially, I was like, that's BS. But then I looked into the data and I was like, you know what? It's not that bad, you know?
Yeah, no, I would agree. It certainly wasn't functioning the same way it was on Friday. They did not have that pace advantage, but they did have a tactical and strategic advantage. And Leclerc was fast enough to pass Russell when they all pitted, when he pitted like a lap or two later. And so I think Leclerc in that car was fast enough, given the advantage he had over Verstappen, but the hard tire killed it. And it's tire warm up at the rear axle. That really was what got them because of the track temperature. So nobody but me cares.
We all care. We love your information dump. Never talk about fuel efficiency again, though, if that's okay.
The mailbag episode.
That was horrific.
The mailbag episode lost 57% of our download audience.
As a guy with dyslexia, that was horrible.
Sorry. I will hold my hands up and say that was my fault. I could have done a much better job.
It was good information. Narratives exist. That's all we'll say on the subject. But Matt, you are an expert in tire strategy, and that is, honestly, I think in the podcast sphere in F1, name me better people that break down tire strategy and strategy in general than this man, Matt Trumpets. Even though he's had a birthday recently and he's getting super, super old, he's probably got a couple of years left in him. Why didn't Ferrari... Why didn't Ferrari just go a bit longer? Why did they bring... It felt like they made two mistakes. They brought Sainz in super early when they had the mediums to carry on. And I think Hamilton showed that you could go a bit longer on the mediums. And then they brought Leclerc in no man's land where you couldn't really make the softs last. That's why they went to the hards. But there was evidence the hards didn't exist. Why didn't they just go longer on the mediums? From my sofa, that seemed obvious.
If you find out the answer to that question, please email me.
Right, yes.
Matt@missedapex.net. It is a mystery because, as Hamilton demonstrated, if you used up your medium tires, you used the speed of your medium tires till they were done, and then you put on the softs at the end, you were quick. There was no reason for Leclerc to have pitted at the same time as Verstappen because Ferrari strategy should have known there was a naturally built offset because Verstappen was on the soft tire first.
This is what
Leclerc's first stint was longer.
And this is what Jono's saying. Jono, this is what you're saying.
That's what I was saying earlier. You're spending too much time racing against other people than figuring out what's the best strategy for you. And so to me, that ruined their race. You know, why not just run that second stint later? Hey, Red Bull, you want to pit earlier? Go for it. We'll stay out. We'll overcut. Hey, pass us, undercut us. That's fine. We'll get you back at the end of the race. But they're too busy going for that. It's the same way Sainz went to, what was with that strategy? Was Sainz on the medium pitting pretty much in the same window that the soft runners were pitting in? I didn't understand that at all. They should have stayed out.
That felt manufactured, Alex, to swap the cars.
I don't understand what Ferrari have done this weekend. They have taken the cars from 2-3 on the grid, which it was the fastest car. Russell's lap in qualifying was a freak and incredible. They've taken 2 and 3 and made it 4 and 6. But this could have been
when you say it out loud, when they
walked into this race, this should have been an easy 1-2 at a canter.
Yeah.
They George got a great start. Fine. Absolutely no problem.
He wasn't
a factor in Ferrari's race from the outside. But even in all their pre-race interviews, we've got to get past George. George is the one we've got to do. They weren't racing George. Yeah. If they just stuck to their pace, they had George beat. The biggest mistake they made straight away was Leclerc was visibly faster than Sainz, and they didn't switch them. I'm sorry, Carlos. Yep. I love you, but you're not in this championship, and your main title rival is back in 10th place. They should have switched that. And then they should have just done the standard, normal strategy that was given to you by F1 TV during the race, which was either soft, medium, medium, or medium, medium, soft. It's not difficult, and they decided to do something crazy, and they look like idiots.
They did. I'm with Spanners. I think that early pitting of Sainz was entirely to get Leclerc ahead, and I think it worked exactly as intended. And then Leclerc was as fast as Verstappen across the middle stint, and then it's that same inexplicable thing that Jono points out. Why did they pit him there when they knew he had to go longer to use the soft compound, and when they could just look at the Alpine's times and know that that tire was not going to work in those temperatures? That's what I don't understand. Somehow Ferrari thought that hard tire would come on song and be better than the medium at the end. The only other conclusion is they thought that you could give Leclerc a set of sauce and a second a lap advantage, and he was not going to be able to pass Verstappen. And that's also equally hard to believe.
So then here's the question, and this is what's going to sum it up. If they had run the perfect strategy, we go back in time in hindsight, and they had done everything perfect, do we think Ferrari would have won this race? I think yes. I think they absolutely yep. would have won 100%. This race, and they would have won.
Should have been an easy one to go into it.
Yeah, I was about to say they should have won. There's too many races to tick off. We won't do that. But yeah, it should have been a 1-2. You're right, Jeansy.
There's so many races they should have won. And I don't want to keep sticking the needle in, but then from the hard tire, as John Neeson points out in our live chat, hello patrons, patreon.com/MissedApex to support us and be in our live chat. John says, once you've made the hard tire mistake, live with it and hope that they come in later. Was it worth the pit stop last to strap on the softs at the end? Yeah, he looked good, Matt, when he put the softs on at the end. I think Hamilton was the only one nearby, but
yep.
You lost all those places.
Which made it worse, right? Because then you could see how fast he might have been.
Yeah.
If they'd have done that.
You're right.
If they just done that.
It's like bullseye. UK viewers will know this. But look at what you could have won. You could have won a speedboat, lad. But yeah. And this is like Sainz just pitting out of the podium positions for... You can see how disappointed I am.
I've never seen you guys this frustrated. You guys aren't getting paid by Ferrari. Don't support Ferrari.
We're not Ferrari fans. Yeah, but we're not Ferrari fans. But this was Sainz pitting out of a podium position for no reason. Killed me last time out. And then here, just strategizing Leclerc out of a race win to be able... What, P5, P6? Where did he finish? I don't care. Don't answer. Alex.
I've never wanted... He finished P6.
I don't care. I said don't answer. I don't care.
I've never wanted Ferrari to win a race, let alone a championship before. It feels like a Man United fan wanting Liverpool to win the league.
All right, calm down.
And it's painful because I just want a challenge. Listen, Max and Red Bull are the best car, team, driver combination out there at the moment, without a shadow of a doubt. And Max deserves to win this championship, but they could have at least made it difficult.
You want more salt in the wound? By the way, we're getting to literally like cayenne pepper on the wound right now. It's that spicy and bad.
It hurts.
But the shortest stint for Leclerc was on the hard tires. And he had four different stints. He had the medium and the soft. And the shortest time he spent on a tire was the most durable tire. Oh my God.
Yeah, it hurts.
What the hell? I was about to say Alex something bad there. Yeah.
It's bad.
I didn't know that the hard was the least amount.
And that's why you're like soft. I think he had 3 used softs left. At least he could have done that. It would have been something different. But I think, Alex, you really did put your finger on it. Is we all want to see a good fight for the championship. And Ferrari have all the tools. They just apparently don't understand how to use them.
So right now, Red Bull have just got full control of this championship, and Ferrari are like a big, giant, powerful horse on a lead. And Red Bull are just walking them up to the saloon in the Old West, and they are tying their lead to a plastic chair. And Red Bull are just going, well, I'm tied to that chair. I can't go anywhere.
Hot take. Give Mercedes the Ferrari's car and we've got 2021 all over again.
Yep.
That's how close it is.
It's bad, isn't it? But not as bad as Alpine. And in fact, we can just play a full-on, general game of whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? The biggest whose fault is it in this race was Alonso versus Ocon. And I want to be here straight away. I'm going to look Matt dead in the eyes right now on this Zoom call and say, Ocon was a menace today. Oh, my goodness. Chopping in front of Alonso on the start, finish straight, getting in his way out of the pits so Ricardo could get in front of them. What was going on with your boy today, Matt?
I don't know. I mean, he was a racing driver and trying to finish as far up the track as he could. I watched the onboards. I watched the beginning. Now, here's two things. I'm going to tell you two things. Thing number one is, like, there was no chopping in front of Alonso. That just, like, seriously slicing. Did not happen.
Smashing.
Secondly, more interesting, watching Alonso's onboard. I mean, yeah. Yeah, Ocon did cover him off. And Alonso did try to come up the inside a little bit into turn one. But you know what I didn't hear? I didn't hear Alonso immediately after that complaining to anyone on the radio. And so I think we got very DTS'd
by the
FOM radio players today.
But Alonso said, I've never seen a worse defense in my life. Was he not talking about Ocon at the start?
I have no idea what he was talking about. All I can tell you is I watched up to the following corner and Alonso had said nothing on the radio to the team at that time.
This is, again, the magic Alonso gaslighting the entire F1 universe. Because he just bitches and moans and complains. And because he's Alonso, everybody loves it and sucks it up. At the start, Ocon got an okay start. Alonso, as always, got a good start, and so did Lewis Hamilton. If you are a racing driver on the grid of a race, if you get a bad start, the thing you do is you move to the inside. You move to the inside so no one can dive down the inside of you, and at least you have some room to manipulate your position for turn one. Okay, so he wasn't blocking Alonso. He was just defending his position where he was and just putting somewhere where he is safe. Yes, okay, Alonso, Hamilton flew past on the left because Hamilton got a good start. With the pit lane one, he comes out the pits. He stays perpendicular with the line at the side of the circuit because he's been told that Alonso and Daniel Ricciardo are there. He's gone tight to the apex of the first corner, gone a little bit wide, as you would do having that kind of entry to the corner. Alonso's alongside him. He's gone to the inside of the corner because he's got cold tyres. He's locked. He's lost a little bit of grip. And Daniel Ricciardo has pulled an amazing move and undercut both of them. It's not Ocon's fault. It's not Alonso's fault. It's a great move from Daniel Ricciardo, and don't take that from him.
Well, okay. The start finish on lap one, off the start line, I hear what you're saying. Yes, cover the inside. That's good. Ocon took up a position which he thought was inside enough. Alonso was about to get his nose in. Ocon very clearly then went even more inside again. So, I mean, Jono, yes, if Alonso, this would be more clear cut, if Alonso was alongside, it would be a bit like Schumacher pushing Massa into the wall. It wasn't quite that, but it was really aggressive. To your teammate.
Barrichello.
To your teammate. Was it Barrichello? To your teammate, Jono.
Yeah.
That's the rough bit.
That's true. And look, if there was grass there, I think Alonso would have taken to the grass, knowing him. Like, he's that type of driver. Obviously, you know, I think the actual wording of the radio message was something like, you know, I've never seen such defense before. Basically insinuating that this guy is defending for his life right now. Alonso's the king of saying stuff in the press and the media to make himself look good, as Jeansy said. Yes, that's one thing. The one thing I'll say is, though, despite all this and despite people, you know, some people liking Alonso, some people irritating him, I love this Alonso and I miss this Alonso and I'm thankful.
Get him off the track.
I'm thankful it's back. I love the intensity. This is what I miss. I miss everybody. Oh, I look good in the press. I'm calm. I'm classy and everything. Stuff that look as intense as Fernando. I love watching that every week.
If Alonso was in the same position as Ocon, he would have done exactly the same, as aggressive, if not more so. And he then would have praised himself on how amazing a job he would have done.
Best ever
that is
defense,
the type of person Alonso is. It's the type of thing he does. It is pure Alonso gaslighting.
And he would have finished eighth and said, that was the race victory. I couldn't have driven better. That's it. Yeah, that was me in the Verstappen's car. I would have won by 45 seconds.
Well, and this is what I love. So about their finishing positions, well, Perez, Hamilton, Verstappen, they finished exactly where they started with Alonso having at some point, I guess, made the overtake on Ocon. But as far as the pit stop goes, well, Ocon should never have been there. It was an incredibly long stop for him. And that's why he wound up right in the middle of the battle. He had, from the pit stop delta, he had 2 or 3 seconds, and they lost it all when he came into the pits. It wasn't on the front end. It might have been on the rear end. Or if you're a conspiracy theorist, they just tried to hold him as long as possible so that Alonso could get around him.
Mm. It was interesting, Matt, though, that battle, that it was sort of, it was pitched as McLaren versus Alpine.
Yeah.
And I feel like McLaren had the run. Obviously, we know they've got a split with driver performance at the moment. Yeah. But it's almost like Alpine had the worst car, but did better.
Yeah, because essentially Alonso and Ocon are about the same speed in qualifying, and they're about the same speed in the race. So they are finishing to the maximum potential of the car, whether you squabble over who finishes first or second. If you're looking at it from a team point of view, they are much better about bringing home double points when they have the car to be in the top 10, whereas it's just Norris and McLaren most times.
Okay. I feel like we've covered actually most of the major points in this race, Matt.
Can I bring up one more?
Is it going to be that Ocon was brilliant in some fantastic way that no one else has noticed?
No. I would like to talk about Aston Martin just for a moment.
Actually, that is where I was about to go. That is good where enough. I was about to go, to be fair. So take your Aston Martin points. Obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about Sebastian Vettel's announcement.
Yes. So I would like to start with the last lap and the last corner at Paul Ricard, where I think, according to Kyle Power, Stroll behaved in an incredibly rude but still legal manner.
I agree.
Towards his teammate Vettel.
Yes. I think we had a consensus, to be fair, on the panel, didn't we? Which is no rules were broken. But again, it's the teammate thing, though. Do you do that to your teammate? And you were the one who said this to me, Matt, when we were talking about Rosberg versus Hamilton all those years ago. And I think it was Austria 2015 or 2016. The fact that made it so rude was it's your teammate. And presumably they go on the plane together. They have ramen noodles at the end of the day together.
Yeah. Awkward. Yeah. Well, and so we get again to the race and we have a race between Stroll on the soft tires. This is after he hit Ricardo.
Wait.
Whoa, wait.
Hang on a minute. We have to play the bumper.
Whoa.
Did I say
whose
something?
Fault is it?
Okay, Matt, describe the incident and we can argue.
Okay. So the incident, it could not be simpler. Daniel Ricciardo pits with Lance Stroll right behind him. They put hard tires on the McLaren because I'm assuming they thought,
at
lap 46, he would not get the softs in the end. McLaren were having a real hard time with degradation on their tires.
Hard time.
Hard.
Behind, Aston Martin puts Stroll on the soft tire. And as they're rolling out of the pits and they hit the pit exit, Aston clearly tells Stroll, Daniel's on hard tires. Go get him, Tiger.
Mm.
And so they run down to turn two, and naturally, you know, Stroll has 97 times the grip of Ricardo at this point. So Ricardo turns in. His McLaren
doesn't turn in, yes. Yeah.
And Stroll puts a massive squeeze on Ricardo that, just to the surprise, I mean, who knew physics could cause this result to happen? There's a collision. And Stroll is immediately taken off the track, and Ricardo manages to carry on ahead of him.
So I'll go to Alex for this. I feel like, ultimately, if you want your race car to do something and it doesn't do that thing, and it not doing that thing results in a crash, then it's your fault for not realizing that your race car could do that thing, or asking your race car to do more things than it is actually capable to do. But I was critical of Perez versus Russell, I think, at Austria, the Austrian Grand Prix, when you don't account for that. I think I was critical of Verstappen at Silverstone 2021, when you don't account for that. So at what point does the outside car have to realise that the inside car might have limitations on what they can do? And at what point does the inside car just have to just brake and duck out?
So, technically,
yeah,
according to the rules, Daniel Ricciardo is at fault.
I agree.
However, sometimes you have to think about surviving. And Ricciardo being at fault gives absolutely zero benefit to Lance Stroll.
Yes.
Because he spun off the circuit.
Yep.
He probably had damage. It probably affected the rest of his race. Stroll was silly because he cut Danny Rick so tight. He's not stupid. He knows that he's on soft tires and Danny Rick is on very, very cold, wet tires. Very, very cold, hard tires. Yeah. Wet tires would be entirely different. Very cold, hard tires.
May as
and
well have been.
The likelihood of him going in deep to that corner and having a lockup or going a bit wide, the percentage chance of that is really, really high. Yeah. I've had this before with a friend of mine who I used to race with. He was always very, 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 very fast, but he was always in accidents. They were never his fault. It was usually someone up the inside.
I know crashing, a guy like that on iRacing, Alex.
Crashing into him. And the problem was he just never gave any margin for someone to make an error. And you have to give that margin because it doesn't matter if you're shouting each other in the gravel trap about whose fault it was when you had the ability, you know, after you've hit the wall at 51G, you've had the ability to avoid that crash.
So non-UK people, you need to Google a TV series from the 90s, I think, called The British Empire. And it is the same actor, it's Chris Barry, who was Rimmer in Red Dwarf. An absolutely amazing scene. I can't do it justice, but basically he ends up in hospital and his defence was that I had the right of way. He was on a zebra crossing with cars speeding towards it. And he's very adamant that, of course, I will step out into speeding traffic because I had the right of way. Doesn't help you because you're in hospital. And I think this is the difference between what is the rules and where does the blame fall? And what would you, as the driver's coach, want your driver to do? And I think that's where Jono Stroll might have fallen down here, is if you were Stroll's coach, you might have said, open this steering up, lads. He's got cold, hard tyres. You probably could have, you know, you could have wall of deathed it.
He's done on the way down to turn three anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But you could have walled of deathed it like Russell did against Alonso and still made it.
Let me preface this with one thing, is that I am... like, people love butter on their toast. I like bashing Lance Stroll's racecraft. Now, on that note, I will say last year, I was the... I'm going to do an Alonso here because, you know what? On the theme of Fernando, I'm going to hype myself up. I was the first person in the world who I think was the person to recognize how bad Lance Stroll is looking at his mirrors when he turns into a corner. Now, in this situation... I think it's very, very harsh to say Stroll, you know, I understand you can always do something different, but I think it's just super, super harsh in this situation. He gave so much space to Danny Rick on the inside. I think Danny Rick had an extra car's width on the inside of the corner. That's what I think. Okay, don't shake your head, Jeansy. I can see you right now. No, it's give me a sec. So when Ricciardo locks up, fair enough. He should have given a bit more room for error. But also, Lance Stroll is not driving like Max Verstappen on lap one of this race, where Verstappen looked like at that start, he was driving like he had a 100-point lead in the championship, which is what he almost has, right? He was basically trying to avoid collisions. Stroll is going for points. Now, one extra thing I'll add to that. I just realized in the last minute that Lance Stroll was on softs, like you guys said, and Daniel Ricciardo was on hards. And now that I figured that out, Lance Stroll, what were you doing? You had 15 laps to get through and you didn't take your time.
Oh, I know. It's bad. And by the way, I'm a bit worried that I didn't say the TV series that you should Google. Did I say British Empire? I did. Okay,
yes,
good.
You did.
It's a brilliant series. Go and watch the British Empire. And then Chris Barry is also later in Red Dwarf. Watch all of Red Dwarf up to season 6 and then burn it and pretend that nothing else existed. But I think it is time... to go to the podium. A race that I fantastically enjoyed, the Hungarian Grand Prix, provided us with a little bit of everything. I feel like this was a buffet of Formula One. Was there huge drama? No. Was there some? Yeah, we had a little bit. Did I get full from the drama? No. I was ready for the next course, which was racecraft and battling. There wasn't as much as, say, a Silverstone thriller, but there was enough. There was the go-kart track indoor circuit characteristics where everyone was setting themselves up for that Sector 1 overtake. And that was fantastic. Was I completely full up from the start-finish straight overtaking? Nah, but there was a second course with Turn 2. It was like a mezze. It was like a tapas and a mezze combined. I really, really enjoyed the day. It was a little bit of everything. There was driver skill. There was intrigue from different teams doing well. There was inter-team battles. This track, these regulations, this weekend just provided me with a full suite of things to feast on in Formula One. And I am sated. So now we move on to the awards. We give out a good thing award and a bad thing award. We get to be super positive. And then from our sofas, we judge people who are really knowledgeable and fantastic about our sport of Formula One. And we just go, ah, yeah, that was a bit rubbish. We allow ourselves this. So let's first go to Jonathan Simon. Hey, Jono, how's it going?
How you going, mate?
Okay, so you're in Australia, which is really super far away.
Yep. Look, it's dark over here in this part of the world. Or is it dark over there yet? Isn't it like 10 o'clock over there?
I'm
actually
in a shed, so I actually don't know.
Yeah. You're in a little bit of a bunker there, are you? Is there? Yeah, well, do you want me to go with good thing of the week? Am I going first?
No. Stop. I want to go with things you do. You commentate on stuff.
Oh, yeah, I do. I do. At the moment, we are doing the... what am I doing at the moment? I've got a series tomorrow on Motorsport Australia F3 series. That's actually on iRacing, which would be pretty cool. There's like some Asian qualifier series. I'll explain that a little later on Twitter. You can follow me at JonnyS8. JonnyS8. The other gigs I'm...
sorry, it's a really bad Twitter handle, so you're going to have to say it slowly.
Now, just one quick thing on that. Actually, two things.
Yeah.
I spent the other day, I'm not kidding, I spent 2 hours sitting down and I drafted three names I could come up with to change with that were available on all socials.
Okay.
Finally sat down and went to change one. And after 20 to 30 minutes, I realized that it was one character too long on Twitter, but it would work on Facebook
and
Instagram.
What would it have been?
I have to keep... Oh, I'm not going to say it because now somebody might register it and steal it. So I'm going to keep it.
So what's your Twitter handle? Twitter, that's the thing that most people do, and Facebook. Twitter.
JonnyS8. Get me on Instagram too, if you like.
That's awful.
I like to post
Thankfully,
stuff.
Matt puts everyone's links in the show notes. So you can just go wherever you are on YouTube or your app and you can just click it. All your handles are terrible. That's your fault. But you're really good at commentating. Will you come and do some of our iRacing commentating with us?
100%. I'm always down for it as well. Just depending on time zones and stuff. At the moment, not to plug the Mist Apex stuff is great. We're doing the Supercars E series at the moment, so it'll be on this Wednesday night Australian time, which is Wednesday. I think Wednesday morning.
No, if it's
British
Wednesday
time,
in Australia, it's like June in British time. Steve,
So take note of that. If you're international, you can watch it on the Supercars YouTube page, digital channels.
Steve, can we edit out all the rival iRacing stuff? So, Jono, what's your thing of the week?
My thing of the week. I was initially going to give it to Nicholas Latifi leading practice 3 because I've been very harsh on him and I gave him that Greyhound idea where, remember in Montreal, I said, I think, sprint weekend, let's scrap that and just have Latifi start a lap ahead and see if everybody can catch him.
Okay.
But I think that I want to keep it Vettel themed. And my thing of the week is Vettel not checking out since he retired. He's still feisty and he didn't give the position back to Lance Stroll on the final lap. That's my thing of the weekend. Well done, Vettel, being ruthless. That's what life's about.
Does anyone want to say anything on Vettel's retirement? Alex?
Considering the guy was the big bad for the majority of his career for me, since he left Red Bull, and after his Baku wobble, I've just really taken to like the guy. He's a really respectful guy. I mean, the respect he showed Hamilton in the battles, in the championship losses and things like that against Lewis, and just the way he's conducted himself in the post-Ferrari years, I've gained a much bigger respect for him. And I think the guy's got massive things he can do for this sport. I really hope he ends up something to do with Formula One because I think he can bring real change to the sport. And it will be sad-ish to see him go from a racing point of view, but he hasn't brought much lately, really. No. And I'd rather just see him in a admin role in Formula One and bring real change.
Or even in a team role, you know, bringing something to the management side of a Formula One team. He's got experience. Obviously, he was the F1, he was the Ferrari chief strategist between 2015 to 2020. So he could reprise that role.
It would be very, very interesting to see what Seb would have done if he was in the position that Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz is in, and how he would have treated some of the calls that he's had. Because I'm willing to bet money he would not have let them put a hard tire on his car.
Mm, that's very interesting. Alex, you, I mean, I like you. You're as close to a friend as I have.
Oh, thanks.
Generally, I wouldn't invite you to my house because I think inviting people to your house is weird.
It's because you think I'll do a poo there. That's what it is.
Yeah. And why not just go to a third location where that kind of thing is dealt with by someone else? That's been my argument. But from a racing point of view, I've always really, really respected you. And you've brought a lot of your racing knowledge to everything we've done, from karting to race analysis to iRacing. And you and Brad tried to convince me to move to a different car, and I respected that. But our iRacing series is staying with Formula, with F3. But a lot of the things you guys have said to me have struck home. So we are moving to a Formula 3 series in our iRacing Cup, where we have pit stops, where we have changeable weather, perhaps taking advantage of iRacing's rain feature. And if
what?
you want
to take advantage of the weather?
Yes, I do want to take advantage of the weather. I know I'm moving to that. We're going to have racier setups. So if you are an iRacer out there or a sim racer who wants to get involved, message us at racecontrol@mistapex.net to get involved. We stream that as well. We'll be starting that from September. And I don't know what you think about this, Alex, we're going to have a dedicated oval competition as well. So the fourth race of the night will be an oval race. Over 6 months, one race a month.
To be fair, I'm keen to get better at ovals. I've never really taken to having a go at it. Richard Malden will love it because he has a specific steering wheel for it.
That's our race.
What car are you using for the ovals? The F3.
It will be a mix. The F3 will feature.
Oh, okay. It'll be interesting around the ovals. Yeah, I've never seen the F3 around an oval. That'd be very interesting. Neither.
So, Alex Van Gien, you are at Alex Van Gien on Twitter.
On Twitter, on TikTok, on Insta.
Yeah.
And I've got a YouTube channel too. And I've already sent Matt all the links that should be in the bio.
Who was your thing, or what was your thing, or why was your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend, I have two, and I will come back to one if Matt doesn't nick it as well, is these regulations. I have never seen cars be this close for this length of time around this circuit. As far as I'm concerned, the way they drove today around this track completely and utterly validates the new rules and regulations. You know, forget what they were like at street tracks because they're tosh. But here, at what is a proper race circuit, despite it being a small race circuit,
yeah,
it was brilliant. They can chase and they can hound. And the brilliant thing about being able to follow closer rather than having to sit 2 seconds away while your tires cool down is you can constantly apply pressure. And when you constantly apply pressure, people make mistakes. And we've seen it, and it's just brilliant. I just love it.
It's just good racing. I like the racing. I don't like the results so much, Alex, but I love the racing this season.
No bias, Banners. No bias.
But you can get close. You can follow. You can do things like let people get into the DRS zone because you want to try and wear their tires, knowing that they're not necessarily going to breeze by you in DRS. But if you're attacking, you can keep pushing. Those days of people saying, oh, I got within 2 seconds and then I had to back off. I had one chance to overtake. It's not
no one said that.
It's good. I like it. Okay, good. Matt, trumpets. Hey, buddy. How you doing? So the video people need you to kind of stand up a little bit. So
okay,
this is a good incentive for people to check out the video version. Matt in his grey T-shirt is sweat. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
There is not a, there's barely a dry patch of your T-shirt. I take it New York is pretty hot tonight.
It's a bit warm in here, yeah.
Yeah. It looks like he's doing the podcast from like a wood-fired oven. What's going on?
It kind of feels like it too, man.
I'm landing in JFK on Friday.
So what people here might not know on Mr. Apex podcast is in the summer, I do make everyone turn their fans off so we can have the best possible audio quality and the smart ones of us wear the black Mr. Apex merchandise. But Matt, you can be followed at MattPT55 on Twitter. Follow Matt Trumpets on Instagram. Matt, what was your thing, or why was your thing, or who was your thing, or when was your thing of the weekend?
Ah, oh, geez, this is such. I'm really there with this choice. I'm tired of having to choose just a thing. Okay. The simple thing, I would want to say Brussels pole lap, but you know what I'm going to say? Because I don't say it often enough. I'm going to say the first 8 laps that Max Verstappen drive, which gave him the victory today. Yeah, he needed a little help from Ferrari strategist. At the end of the day, it was just flawless. He passed everyone he needed to pass. And it opened the doors for the win to come to him. And especially given the fact that he had that clutch problem. And, I don't know, it's amazing. He's driving however fast, does a 360 spin, and then just passes a Leclerc again, like, oh yeah, I'm going to get groceries now. I gotta say, I think he kind of deserves it this time around.
It's pretty good. I'm going to give my thing of the weekend to Lando Norris. Yeah, you played a little bit to the cameras, but he's a frustrated young man. He keeps referencing how his peers are doing well. Yeah, George Russell, he got that pole position. Yes, Leclerc is going off and getting race wins and challenging for the title. I think he now is feeling like he has not got the equipment to go and show his potential, and every opportunity he gets to show that he's the number one British driver, that he's the number one McLaren driver, that he is a top force in Formula One driving, he will take that opportunity, even when it's not optimal to his strategy. Lando Norris is playing the career game. I criticized it earlier, but F1 is a career game. It's not over a race. It's not over a stint. It's not over a season. It's over a decade or two if you can manage it. Alex, and this is why you got to take a deep breath and go, is he playing to the media? Yeah, of course he is.
Lando is my second favourite driver in Formula One. I adore the guy. I love him on and off the track. And he has made everybody believe that Daniel Ricciardo isn't a good racing driver.
That's
how good a job
that
Lando Norris is doing. Because Daniel Ricciardo is number three for me, and I still believe he's got it. He showed he's got it the way he overtook two Alpines in one corner. He showed he's still got it when he won at Monza last year. Mm. But that's how good Lando is. And Lando deserves to be in a title contention car.
The greats.
The McLaren can't give
the greats that. Make good drivers look ordinary. Kovalainen, Bottas, Alonso. Controversial. Well, Jono.
Wait, Jamesy, who's your favourite driver? Is it Alonso?
Perez. It's been Perez for...
it's Lewis Hamilton. And listen, but to be fair, he was going to be my other thing of the weekend because he showed that the old dog still has tricks, that he can still pull off. The fact that he was miles behind at one point and he still only finished 8 seconds behind Max today was just testament to how great that driver is.
Lewis Hamilton's brilliant at race cars.
He really is.
I don't think that's not too controversial. Okay, that's all our things of the weekend. Now we get to judge people from our sofas and sheds and say who missed the apex.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
All right, let's be all negative and stuff. Who's up for it? Hands up, hands up, hands up. Who's got a missed apex? Jono, let's go.
Well, I was going to keep a Vettel theme, but trumpets, that shirt needs some intermediates or something, mate, because that is that's a hot day over there. And I'm in my hoodie right now for those watching on the video
podcast. So you're in Australia,
right?
Probably a lot hotter than
it's winter.
What is the temperature there, Jono? I have to know.
At the moment, it says it's 7 degrees, which is surprising. It's only 6 a.m. Yeah, there last night I think it was 0 degrees in the morning. So that's like a hot winter's morning right now for us. Yeah.
Okay, look, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing the weather report. We're doing the Mr. Apex Award. Jono.
Oh, yeah, my bad. Okay, here we go. So bad thing. Let's keep it Vettel themed. Is that he's retiring. I'm going to miss him. He's one of my favorite drivers. I had a trio of favorite drivers growing up. It was Vettel, Alonso, Hamilton. Two of them, well, all three of them look like they could be gone in the next few years.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that's pretty sad to me. Vettel, who just quickly, because we're going to cover this in a future podcast for sure, but who had a career where he won a race in a car that had no business winning, 4 championships.
One race in the lap or whatever. Okay.
Yes. And then his career just took, pretty much wasn't the same after Canada 2019 when he switched those pit boards because it just hasn't been the same since that race. But that's my thing of the weekend. I'm going to miss him.
All right. Interesting. Okay, good. Alex, Van Gene.
Mattia Bonotto's denial.
Bah, 2 weeks in a row.
Sorry.
Do you know what, Alex? I'm too old and ugly to be gaslit. I was gaslit by Stefano Domenicali, by Jean Todt. I will not have it anymore. I'm too old and ugly to be gaslit by Ferrari team principals. He's in denial.
The fact that he can say they didn't have the pace today is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It looked like they were managing when they were behind George and they could have gone faster. Leclerc 100% could have gone at least 3/4 of a second a lap quicker, and I believe that. There isn't really, we've got to have a little bit of a debrief. A little bit? You have to go and kick stuff over, throw chairs across the room, and hang the guy who's doing the strategy out the window by his ankles.
I think you went too far. I think that's too far. I would like to. That is Alex Van Gien.
Metaphorically.
No.
Not physically.
The way it sounded like endorsing physical violence, and I have to stamp that out right now.
But yeah, I don't know what it is. I feel like they've gone from this team that completely instruct their drivers on what to do to now wanting to be friends with the fans and not tell their drivers what to do.
Yeah.
And they're now lost. They need to go back to the dark side Ferrari that none of us liked, where they can actually start winning again, you know. But unfortunately, the three main protagonists to who helped Ferrari be as good as they were back in the early noughties can't be in there anymore.
I'll tell you what it is. They have spent too long in the wilderness and they have forgotten how to develop a winning strategy. They constantly look at the wrong people. They constantly make the wrong assessments. They don't pick up contextual information quickly enough, and they haven't figured out how to ask the drivers for what they need to make the best decisions for everyone. And we're seeing evidence of that race after race after race. They've got a great car. And I'm not going to disbelieve Bonotto. I think they were impacted by the weather. They didn't have the advantage today they had on Friday. But at the end of the day, that's still no excuse. Leclerc had enough pace to win this race, and it was absolutely on them that they didn't hoover up that information mid-race and make use of it.
Their nearest competitor was 10th. Their nearest competitor was 10th, and I mean, he's only, what was he, 7th by the end of lap one? It's not all of a sudden he was in the top four after a couple of laps. They had all the time in the world to capitalize and have an easy walk home 1-2.
You know, what people don't realize is that Bonotto was the chief technical officer of Ferrari from 2016 to 2019.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? Why am I mentioning that? Because he's the person, as a chief technical officer, who needs to make sure the car is safe, fast, reliable, and legal. He approved an engine that had a secret deal that wasn't even legal.
Alleged.
And so, yeah, alleged. Yeah, again, I don't want to speculate because who knows what that alleged deal was. So this was the man in that position who's done that. Now he's taken over the team. Look, I think he's done a good job with bringing the team to this stage, and I don't want to trash him too much because, yeah, the car wasn't in the perfect conditions for him today. But they got a lot of pressure on them at the moment.
Hang on. For legal reasons, we have to say that Bonotto has allegedly taken over the team.
Yes, Jono.
Who missed the apex for you?
Didn't I already answer this?
Oh, I don't know.
Wasn't that the Vettel thing?
Oh, no.
That was Trumpets. Trumpets is
next.
Matt's
next. Sorry. Okay, good.
Okay, so this is a bit in the weeds, but this is only as part of my show preparation. I watched the Stroll Vettel interchange about the place. And if anything really missed the apex, and if you have access to onboards, you can go listen to Stroll's reaction to discovering he's not getting his place back because it was not pretty. Oh, he was not very happy in the slightest. And in the team's defense, Vettel was well inside DRS on Ocon, which is why they sent him forward to see if he could catch him. And he did. And he was finished maybe a tenth or two behind him at the end of the race. So it was completely fair of the team. I don't think Stroller's engineer knew it. So fair enough. I'm sure once he knew that, he retracts all his comments. But oh my, it was hilarious to listen to.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys, so much for tuning into our Hungarian Grand Prix race review. It is a Grand Prix that I've always loved because, a lot of it is just sitting behind a car. But it hasn't been as bad for overtaking as people have made out to be. And if these new regulations can unlock tracks like the Hungaroring, then perhaps, you know, the Nürburgring Grand Prix circuit might be good. Perhaps Hockenheim might be unlocked with this regulation set as well. We don't have to get rid of Spa, surely. I think we can acknowledge that the F1 cars have outgrown tracks, and F1 is making a concerted effort to make sure that the cars can still race around these historic and fantastic and proper European Grand Prix tracks, which makes me positive, which makes me happy. I've enjoyed my Sunday. I hope you've enjoyed our race review as well. There's several ways that you can interact with us more. Obviously, we would love you to support us on Patreon. That is what keeps us going. Me, Matt and Chris all benefit from having freelance hours paid for by Missed Apex Podcast. And that is partly due to people who are not too annoyed by listening to adverts, but also by people who will support us. So if you think we are worth $1.99 a show, and if you got to this point in the show, maybe we are, that's 33 cents. 33 cents a show. Patreon.com/MissedApex. See what tiers are available. Join us in our Slack group. Get extra silly and worse content in our Patreon-only pods. And yeah, it would just be nice more than anything. So patreon.com/MissedApex. If you want to race with us on sim racing, email racecontrol@MissedApex.net. If you want to come karting with us, there's 2 seats left for September 3rd. Obviously, people do drop out, so there might be opportunities later, but now would be the time. Email me, spanners@missedapex.net, or go to missedapexpodcast.com/karting. Now, it's a bit up in the air what we're doing for the next few shows, but it's a summer break. I think we're going to do a quiz, Matt. Are you involved in the quiz?
Sure. I know almost nothing, so it's always entertaining
you
to listen to
you
be wrong.
You and me always do the worst in the quiz.
Yeah, I know.
Kyle smashes it. Jono, you're going to be here for the first time for a quiz.
My first ever map quiz. I've never done it before.
No, and Catman is a great quiz master. Alex, are you in?
No, I think you're doing it in a couple of weeks, aren't you? I think my way.
It might be next week.
And
as
also,
well.
If Kyle's doing it, I'm definitely not doing it.
Kyle wins every time.
Why are you not doing Kyle v. Brad again? Because that's always entertaining.
Kyle has an earpiece in. Someone Googles the answers for him.
Maybe. But if you want to, you know, test your knowledge against our quizmaster, I think we're going to do that in the next week or so. We've got a great magazine show lined up for the 14th as well. And I think, you know, we're going to do a magazine show that has a segment covering the retirement of Sebastian Vettel and looking back on his career as well. So, yes, there's no racing for the next few weeks, but Missed Apex Podcast will be putting out content all through the summer and some patron-only content as well. But wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.